If you're a pro, you know that this is not efficient because you know there's a better way. There's also a better way to save. When pro customers buy building supplies in bulk at Lowe's, they save up to 20% every day. Buy in bulk and save up to 20% on concrete, gypsum, and gypsum accessories. At Lowe's, buy more, save more. Visit the Pro Desk or lowesforpros.com for details. Discount applies to contractor pack items. Minimum purchase required. U.S. only.
You are Locked On Eagles, your daily podcast on the Philadelphia Eagles, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On Eagles. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow my work at Breaking Football, and you can find me on Twitter at Michael J. Kist. That's K-I-S-T. I am here with my co-host, Benjamin Solak from Bleeding Green Nation and Pro Football Spot, and you can follow him at Benjamin Solak on Twitter. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing well, Mike. I'll be honest with you. I'm a little bit indignant. I'm a little bit riled up because preseason power rankings can't help but be nice to the Cowboys. No matter what they do in the offseason, every offseason the Cowboys are going to make a move for the Super Bowl. And I was tired of it last year. I'm tired of it this year again. It's all just ridiculous, man.
National media and the Cowboys have a love affair.
I can't handle it.
It's very well documented. And we're going to get into that a little bit later. First off, I want to let you guys know that we're going to have Eric Turner from Locked On Bills. Me and him are going to talk a little bit about Ronald Darby, his years with the Bills, and his fit with the Eagles. He's been following the Bills for a long time and knows his stuff, so he's going to bring some new information to us. Now, as we are recording this, the news of Ryan Matthews being released is dropping. Matthews passed his physical, which means we avoid paying the settlement and save $4 million against the cap. Last year, Matthews had 155 carries for 661 yards and 8 touchdowns. Ben, how do we feel about the Ryan Matthews release?
Let me just pick up my jaw off the floor real quick that we released Ryan Matthews. I'm just shocked. No, I mean, injury prone, was never going to be a definite RB1. You had guys behind him who had skill sets, and just the inconsistency and the inavailability. The writing was on the wall, and you're not going to pay Ryan Matthews $4 million. No one's going to pay Ryan Matthews $4 million. So we all knew his release was coming. Terrence Brooks already got his number like last week. So we don't even have anything to look forward to there, man. This is just, you know, we all knew this was coming. This is business as usual. And now it's just a question, like we addressed in the last pod, you know, how is this running back depth chart going to work out? How is this committee going to be divvied up? And as we discussed, like, you know, nobody really knows for sure. It'll be something to watch during the season, without a doubt.
Yeah, if only we could have waited for Ryan Matthews to get released before the Ronald Darby trade, and Ronald Darby wouldn't be running around with number 35, and we wouldn't have to cut Wendell Smallwood so he could have 28, right?
Can I tell you something, honestly? Whenever these numbers come out, I always get so confused why people get up in arms. I don't know what the good numbers or what the bad numbers are. I really don't. I don't have a schema for this thing. So, like, Ronald Darby gets 35, and I think to myself, okay, like, usually corners are in the 20s. He's in the 30s. He's allowed to do that. Let's move on. And then I go to the timeline, and people are furious. Like, Darby's going to be a bust because his number's above 30. I don't, like, somebody's got to teach me all these rules, man. I don't know any of them.
Well, I know with the running backs, Alvin Kamara over in New Orleans has number 41.
Yeah.
And there's only been, like, 3 running backs in the last, like, 20 years that have over 1,000 yards that have the number 40-plus. So, I mean, I think there's something to it, bro.
Advanced analytics here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. Running backs, their jersey numbers, and their production over the past 20 years. Tune in next week.
It matters, man. We're going to go with a deep dive on that. All right. So, yesterday I talked about the starting offensive line for the Eagles. And according to the depth chart released today, it's looking like I talked about yesterday. It's Lane Johnson, Brandon Brooks, Jason Kelsey, Isaac Samalu, and Jason Peters. I made the point that I felt offensive tackle was a need coming into the offseason, considering Peters possibly retiring after this year and Lane's precarious situation. Rolling the clock back a little, did you feel the same way about the needed offensive tackle, if there was one? And if so, did you have an ideal fit and value in the draft that would have warranted an offensive tackle being picked?
Yes, I certainly agreed with you in regards to offensive tackle being a need. I don't think at any time you should look at your offensive tackle position and be like, yeah, we couldn't bolster this. And I feel the same way about your edge position as well, because those are two of the most valuable positions you're going to see besides quarterback. And definitely looking at a you know, I have a guy like Jason Peters who, I mean, the bodyguard, he's maintained that health every season. You know, he's going through like back spasms. No, that was Fletcher Cox has the back spasms. But, you know, he goes through something every season, you know, gets the wear and tear. He's always walking around. Looks like he's, you know, just barely held together by duct tape, but he holds it down. You know, he still is producing at a great level, but you have to know that the light's at the end of the tunnel. You know, the end of the road is near for Jason Peters. He can only keep on going for so long. And then you love Lane Johnson, and his skill set is extraordinary, and he can do great on the left side and on the right side. Having two bookend tackles is awesome, but there's that huge cloud hanging over Johnson with the potential for a massive suspension should he, you know, accidentally ingest an incorrect amino acid for the fifth time, as we're supposed to believe. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a scary thing. Now, Big V, Halapolavati Vaitai, which, by the way, if you want me to spell it for you, I can. I've
you
been
just
practicing.
Nailed that pronunciation. I've just been calling it Big V because I'm scared to try.
You know what I learned today? I was going through the depth chart that was released, and they have the pronunciation on the bottom. You know Camus Grieger Hill? His last name is actually pronounced Grugier. It's Camus Grugier Hill, which makes him sound not like a football player. Yeah. That's for freaking sure. Yeah. He sounds like he belongs in France somewhere as a diplomat. But anyway. You know, I liked what I saw from Big V coming in and playing the right tackle for the period of time that he had to. Is that something that I want starting regularly on the right-hand side? No. That would be in a pinch, sure, but I think in the ideal case that doesn't occur. I was loving a guy out of Temple, actually, a Philly kid, Deion Dawkins in the draft, and he was polarizing for some people. He definitely had some what I thought were mental lapses. I saw a lot of false starts, a lot of just like – laziness, you know, just not really being mentally engaged all the way. But when he was locked and I saw, you know, a real powerful punch, he had nice reach, he could get into his set quickly, though his footwork was definitely left a little bit to be desired. And there was a lot of talk about transition to guard, and we know that historically the Eagles have valued that versatility, that swing ability to be a guard and a tackle. You know, Alan Barber comes to mind, Matt Tobin comes to mind, they like that in their sixth guys. And so Dawkins was a guy I liked, and the Bills, I believe, took him in the second round, and that's right about where I had him. And if he had dropped around to where the Eagles were, which he did, the Bills took him right around that area, that 43rd overall pick. Obviously, I think Sidney Jones is the better pick there. I would have liked to see Dawkins go. You know, they chose not to address offensive tackle in the draft. Okay, you have what's looking like a fantastic offensive tackle class coming up in the next draft. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to see them address that at some point with a pick, hopefully earlier than the fifth round, just to get bodies in there to really make sure you shore up that third position. Because all you need is one bad injury and one amino acid, and you're stuck with Big V starting on the left-hand side. And that's not good for anybody.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I don't know about you, but when I saw Dawkins, like you said, he wasn't always mentally engaged. When he wasn't, he played kind of soft. Like the motor wasn't always running, and he could be violent, but it kind of turned off and on. So, I mean, I liked him, and I liked the ability to use that swing tackle like that as your sixth guy. So, yeah, I'm with you there. I was more greedy with Cam Robinson in the first round. I thought that might be the surprise pick. But, you know, it is what it is, and we're gonna see what the next draft class looks like. Come April, and it's looking pretty good. So next thing, I posed this question yesterday, and I want your take on it, Ben. Would you do a deal where we trade Jason Kelce to the Saints for Mark Ingram right now? This was rumored back in March. I'm going to bring it up. I'm going to drag that dead body up and ask you, would you do it?
Right now, no. And the simple reason is I don't think Mark Ingram is better enough than what we currently have to warrant releasing Jason Kelce, who, even if he had a bit of a down season last season, is still a serviceable body on the interior line, still knows how to handle it. He's a veteran. He can really help out a young quarterback. I don't think there's enough value in bringing Ingram in and then having Ingram and Pumphrey and Sproles and Blunt all in the same running back room. I just don't think you're getting enough value out of Ingram in that case. Not to mention, I'm very, very comfortable sitting here with three good interior offensive line starters, serviceable interior offensive line starters, and Kelce, Wisniewski, and Sewolo, and just waiting and watching all of these injuries and all of these training camps keep happening. I mean, you've seen Eagles Twitter. Every time a linebacker gets injured, Michael Kendrick's name just floods the timeline, right? Because he's somebody that the Eagles think, you know, the Eagles are looking to trade. And so I'm okay with sitting here with this depth and holding on to Kelce. And if a team needs a center in a pinch come like week four, you know, they're going to come calling for Jason Kelce, and if we feel like the deal's done, the deal's there. I don't see enough value in Ingram right now to make the trade.
I don't know if I'm necessarily with you on that, but I can see your point as far as keeping depth and the injuries. And, you know, as soon as you make that trade, someone on the line goes down, and now you're super thin at offensive line. So I'm with you as far as that point goes. I think Ingram is an underrated back, but like you said, I don't think it's necessarily like a big upgrade for us to bring him in. He did have 98 catches over the last 2 years, so he can contribute in the receiving game as well. But all right, so Ben's not with me on that one. We're not going to trade for Mark Ingram. That's fine. We'll move on. I want to get to something that's going to make Ben pretty angry. So ESPN just released their power rankings. And I saw on Twitter, Ben, you had an issue with the Cowboys being sixth. Now, I spoke last week about a possible Cowboy regression, and now after that, Zeke has the six-game suspension looming. So take ESPN to task. Why is having the Cowboys sixth completely and entirely wrong?
How many variables right now do you know consistently that you're positive about in the Cowboys roster? How many are you certain? I mean, you've got some solid consistency there in the line, obviously, with Travis Frederick and Zach Martin, but Leary and Freight are both gone. You have no idea who's going to be rushing the passer in this godforsaken team where everybody is either suspended or going to get suspended or coming off a suspension. You don't know. You have no consistency at cornerback as far as who's covering. You're putting a ton of faith in a lot of second-year players, in Dak Prescott and Anthony Brown, I think, is their one corner that they like a lot there. But you don't have Ezekiel Elliott for six games. You're assuming that Jalen Smith's going to come in and be successful, even though you've only ever seen him in training camp. It just seems to me like you're taking Barry Church has gone to, right? It seems to me like you're taking so many liberties, and you're treating Jason Garrett like he's Nick Saban right now, just assuming that the next man up is going to be as good as the last guy. And are the foundational pieces for the Cowboys still there? Absolutely. Is what looks like the franchise quarterback there? Yes. Franchise left tackle? Absolutely. Franchise wide receiver? Sure. Running back? Only for 10 games now. Do they have the franchise pieces? Yes. And I get why you're so enamored by that. But it's a 22-man game, and there was a lot of turnover in Dallas this year. And I see how they could come in and be like, you know, the sixth best team in the league by week three, but I'm not going to call them the sixth best team now. Not when there are teams below them, like the Raiders coming in at seventh, the Chiefs are coming in at eighth. I'm sorry, those are so much more known quantities than the Cowboys are right now. And I would much rather see them above Dallas.
Look, I'm with you there. And I'm sure if you're listening to this podcast, you would agree, or at least hope, that the Cowboys are going to take a step back this year. So I can't wait to see it, and I can't wait to see how the national media treats it, the excuses that they make.
Absolutely. And again, I could easily see this Dallas Cowboy team coming in and being up there competing with your Green Bay Packers and with, you know, your Seattle Seahawks, so on and so forth. But to me right now, this is a preseason power ranking. I'm going to rank the teams that I know are going to come in and produce. Mm. And I don't have as much faith in the Cowboys.
Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there is a better, simpler way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will help you get closer to the action for a great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats. I actually just used SeatGeek to buy tickets to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers versus the New England Patriots in Week 5. It was super easy. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and to find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, my listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code LONFL today. That's promo code LONFL for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. All right, and we are here with Eric Turner from Locked On Bills. Eric, how you doing, man?
What's going on, Mike? Thanks for having me on, buddy.
Absolutely. Look, we've been beating this Darby thing to death this week, and I figured we'd beat it up a little bit more and bring on someone a little more familiar with Ronald Darby as a player that's followed him. Eric, you are the host of the Locked On Bills podcast here on the Locked On Network. Let the people know a little bit more about yourself as well.
Well, I do run CoverOne.net. It's a Bills-centric website. We do, obviously, a podcast with Locked On. We do video breakdowns, scouting reports, a little bit of everything, usually surrounding the Bills. But No, it's definitely fun to be a part of this network. I mean, primarily because this, you know, the collaboration and talking to guys like you on other teams. And I mean, our teams play this week too, so I'm sure we'll have something to talk about post game as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't wait to talk with you after the game and get your impressions and whatnot. So one of the reasons, or the main reason I wanted to talk with you today about Darby, you followed him a lot. So I just wanted to get your overall impression of the caliber of player that we're getting here in Philadelphia.
Darby is he's a great athlete. You know, to start, he's a man mirror cover corner. So he's very sticky. You know, he's one of those corners that can run with anyone. He's in the 4-3, 40 range. But he does most of his work up near line of scrimmage. And because of his stature, because of his physical limitations as far as height, strength, and body build, he's not going to be a guy that's going to be really disruptive at the line of scrimmage, but he's a guy that's going to immediately get into the hip pocket of the opposing receiver, regardless of height, regardless of size, regardless of body build. I mean, there were times last year in his rookie year where he was matched up versus Gronk out wide, and, you know, he used the boundary well to press him to the sideline. He's an impressive player in the short to intermediate range. His issues, though, are down the field.
Right, and I know the Eagles struggled a lot when teams started to realize, hey, we can stay away from the Eagles' pass rush by doing a lot of short passes. It happened in the Lions game, it happened in the Packers game, and teams really ate us up that way. So you do believe that, as far as the short passing game goes, that Darby can give us an instant upgrade. Is that correct?
Oh, no doubt about it. His best year, his rookie season, when Rex Ryan was just brought in that first season, he excelled because he has the ability to be aggressive, to jump routes that are in front of him. And that's one thing that teams attacked us his rookie year were quick passes, get the ball out, because they knew Rex Ryan was going to bring it, bring the heat, and have Gilmore and Darby try to lock down the number one and two receivers. So that's when he excelled. His struggles last year were more due to down the field. And, although we did get a good amount of sacks, when teams blocked up the play well, he was exposed because he was on an island down the field. Not that he was out of position per se, but that he just had trouble at the catch point down the field.
Okay. Awesome. And look, we both put polls up about this trade, asking our different followers to let us know who won that trade. Of course, my followers said that the Eagles won that trade, and they were also impressed that Barnett had two sacks, because I included that in the poll. And your followers said that the Bills won that trade. Who do you believe won the trade, if you had to call it right now?
I think that's exactly right. I think both sides won. I think that there were also some rumors that Darby didn't buy in. I saw something on Peter King, Monday Morning Quarterback, that maybe Darby didn't buy into the new regime, the new system. And I could see that, honestly, because in McDermott's zone defense, they run a lot of off coverage. And one thing you'll notice when you start to look at film with Darby is he in off coverage, it's not his strength. It is something he actually even worked on coming into last season. So as talented as he is, there's a rumor going around that he didn't buy in and that he may have not been a fit. And in Jim Schwartz's defense, with the defensive line that you guys have, with the pressure that you're going to put on opposing quarterbacks with the front four, I think Darby just excels that much more.
You heard it here first, folks. The Eagles won that trade.
Oh, come on now. No, I say it's a push. At the very least, it's a push.
All right.
Because we do need a big target for Tyrod. So, I do like Matthews, and I do think he is a fit, not just on the field, but also off the field. He's got the character that McDermott and Bean have been looking for.
Yeah, I totally agree. Eric, thank you so much for stopping by, man. I can't wait to talk with you about this coming up game on Thursday with the Eagles and the Bills. So we're going to talk more later, all right?
Sounds good, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
All right, brother. Take it easy.
All right, sit.
And we're back here on Locked On Eagles. Good talk with Eric. Always nice to have him in studio. We're going to be talking with him later this week, possibly for the Monday show, because the Eagles and Bills play on Thursday night. So look forward to that. We're also going to have previews of that tomorrow as well. Ben, you got anything else, brother?
No, I mean, Peterson, I've heard, is leaning towards playing Alshon Jeffrey in that second preseason game, so we might get a look at that. Darby's expected to play, so, you know, revenge game in preseason week two. Doesn't get more high intensity than that. But, man, I'm just jazzed for the season to start. Jazzed to keep the podcast going. I'm sorry I wasn't able to make it yesterday, but, man, it's going to be a fun season. I'm pumped.
It is, man. It is. Look forward to Thursday night. There's going to be a lot of new pieces on the field for an Eagles to get your first look at in that Kelly green. Are they wearing Kelly green?
I want to bring back the blue and the yellow alternates. That's what I like. You remember those?
Yeah.
Where they're running on the field like a pack of highlighters. Those killed me, man. We should bring those back.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And remember, keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly.
You are Locked On Eagles, your daily Philadelphia Eagles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Is democracy in danger or decline? Condoleezza Rice, William Galston, and Carlos Gutierrez and others take on this question in the fall edition of The Catalyst, a journal of ideas from the Bush Institute. Surveys show Americans place less trust in institutions like the media and business. Others contend America has faced far more challenging periods and emerged strong. Leading policymakers, Bush Institute experts, and respected journalists take on this debate. Read about it at bushcenter.org/catalyst.